The Big Wedding Planning Podcast.
Just two wedding planners tearing it up. Listen, learn, plan that wedding.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Big Wedding Planning Podcast, a show for anyone involved in planning your wedding. We want you to learn something valuable and be entertained at the same time. My name is Michelle Martinez, and Christy Matthews is my co-host normally, usually. And I have to say, although we do a lot of episodes where we tag team, where like Christy will interview someone on her own because I'll be busy, or I'll do the same because she'll be busy, we until now always do the intro together. However, people, as you know, this is wedding season. Not only is it wedding season, but it's the wedding boom of 2021 because Christy can't do the intro with me. This is how desperate we are right now, people. But you know what? It's fine. Don't worry, because one thing we will always do is this podcast, okay? So no matter what it takes, it's just me on this intro, for better or for worse. You decide. Anyway, this episode is a really good one. And it's very specific, and it aligns with our mission statement and our goal with this podcast, right? With our message, with our beliefs. And we say it all the time, right? Inclusivity is key. Perfection is a myth. Wedding planning for all, everyone, right? We talk about inclusivity all the time. In this episode, we continue the conversation in the form of talking about humans out there who have disabilities. Now, chances are you listening right now, you know someone with a disability, and it might even be you, right? Whether it's someone who's hearing impaired, someone who has had some sort of an accident, someone who was born with a disability, maybe you're in a wheelchair, whatever it is, chances are you know someone or you are that someone. So Kelly Braun Johnson is a disability advocate. And as you'll hear, I met her on Clubhouse and I was super impressed and really inspired by what she does. And I knew that I wanted to have her on the podcast because we get listener emails from time to time. So we wanted to bring this episode. We've been wanting to do something like this for a long time, but it was a matter of finding the right person. And Kelly, you are the right person, and we're so thankful for you. I'm going to read Kelly's bio, and then we're going to jump straight into this. Kelly Braun Johnson is an autistic and hard of hearing self-advocate, author, and founder of Completely Inclusive, which is a consulting company helping businesses transform their company culture to be inclusive and accessible to all. Kelly lives in Montreal, Canada, with her husband and her two boys. Kelly is a disability advocate. She herself is autistic and hard of hearing, and her goal is to improve workplace cultures so that everyone can feel included. Kelly wrote a book on parenting for autistic children. In fact, her eldest son is autistic and her youngest son is adopted. Her passion is to help people and make things easier for others. And now, let's go to our interview with Kelly Braun Johnson.
I'm Kelly Braun Johnson. I am an autistic and hard of hearing self-advocate based in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. I've been married for over 20 years to my partner, and we've got two boys.
Very good. Welcome.
Excellent. Very good. Welcome, Kelly. Thank you. So, as I mentioned on the intro here, you and I, we met on Clubhouse.
Yes.
As with many of my guests lately, our guests lately on the podcast are people that we're meeting on Clubhouse. Is that happening with you too, Kelly?
It's amazing. Yeah. I've met so many amazing people through Clubhouse.
It's so cool. It's so cool. And I can't remember what room we were in, but you know, you were talking about what you do and kind of your passion and what your mission is. And I just was like, oh, we need to talk to you. We need to talk to Kelly on the podcast. I say this all the time. And, you know, anybody planning a wedding could be any type of person walking this earth, right? And so I remember when you and I did our onboarding call, you had said that the statistic is somewhere around 25% of the population in the US and Canada has a disability.
Right.
That's and so most people listening to this episode know someone or family members or are someone with a disability.
Exactly. And the disability community is the largest minority group that you can become a part of at any time in your life, right? You could have an accident. You could just become sick. Anything could happen. And as we age, a lot of us join the disability community. So it's not just about who you are right now. It's also planning ahead for the future of what could be and what could happen.
Wow. I didn't even think about that part.
Yeah, no matter what background, but then also just, as you said, like life events or age changes things. Whereas, you know, maybe your sexuality or your religion or your gender won't change. And we speak to inclusivity and all of those categories, but we have not done an episode like this yet. And we have gotten listener questions regarding all of this topic. So we're really glad to have you on so we can get to it. It feels like one of those episodes we're doing that seems overdue.
It really is. It really is. And so I'm really happy that you're here and that I met you, Kelly. Can you talk a little bit more in detail about what you do for work and just your personal kind of mission?
Right. So about 3 years ago, I decided that I would go full-time into consulting with businesses. I created a company called Completely Inclusive, where I go in to teach them about inclusive practices and creating accessible and accommodating work environments. My goal really is to have everybody feel that they can be comfortable and bring their whole selves to work. And I don't just talk about, I guess, things that commonly people think about when they think about accessibility, when we think about the things we can see, like wheelchairs or canes or things like that. Whereas I also wanted to make sure that workplaces were considering the kind of perks they were offering. You know, sometimes they'll offer things like, beer and pizza on Fridays at 5. And that's not great if you're like me, I'm gluten intolerant and I don't eat dairy. So pizza's not really my thing, unless you get me a gluten-free, dairy-free pizza. And then there's, you know, if there's Muslims or anybody that doesn't want to drink alcohol, then having a beer party is not going to be inclusive for them either. And so I just find that companies are spending money trying to make employees happy. And it actually kind of makes employees feel kind of uncomfortable and excluded, because then how come that person's not participating? And then they have to explain, and it just makes you feel really awkward. And so I just want people to feel comfortable everywhere in society. I want people to feel included and comfortable no matter where they are. And the onus shouldn't always be on that person to have to advocate for themselves all the time. I love it if we could just have a workplace and a society where you don't have to explain those kind of needs, or you shouldn't have to ask to use the elevator instead of the stairs or whatever it is. So that's pretty much what my mission is.
That's a pretty hefty mission and pretty important one.
Yeah. I figure I'm just going to keep doing this until I die. So
okay. Sounds like it was a part of your life anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah.
As yourself.
Right. I mean, I've had bad experiences in workplaces myself, and I just want to make it easier for other people. I want to make it easier for my kids when they go and start looking for jobs.
Yeah, I think like incentivizing things for workplaces is a good, it's like a positive thing they're trying to do. The bosses are like, we want to go team. We're all going to, you know, get to this reward together, or it's Friday or whatever, but it's not the same incentive for everyone. If someone feels very much like, well, that's, it doesn't matter to me, or I can't participate in that. So
right.
What do I get to like slack off this week because yeah, exactly. I don't need the pizza. And with weddings and what we're talking about, gatherings and events, I think about ways to celebrate could be kind of aligned with that incentive idea. Like, we're all going to be here to celebrate, all of us, our people. And then a couple would feel, I think most couples, it's safe to say, would feel terrible if they knew that they didn't think outside the usual perspective enough to make all of their guests feel able to be, you know, celebrate with them. Like, you set it all up and you spend all this money, and then you find out later that people that you love felt like not a part of it, or not comfortable, or not seen. That mm-hmm. would be negative, and that nobody would yeah, for sure. want that.
Yeah. And it happens. I mean, it happens a lot. Like, I know I have some vegan friends who feel that they're left out, and they feel that they have to bring their food with them everywhere they go, which is just kind of, you know, ridiculous. If you're going to a wedding, and, you know, especially if you're paying for your plate, let's say, and then, oh, well, I have to bring my own food because otherwise I'll starve. Or, you know, there's fireworks and there might be children and their ears hurt, or they're scared, or who knows? Like, there's just so many different things. And if you're able to create an environment where everybody can celebrate in a way that is comfortable for them, and they want to be there, with you, right? So it's about kind of trying to take everybody's needs into account.
Well, and that's sometimes really hard, right? Because you know, it's interesting that you say, you know, everybody has different needs, and there are so many, even that we're probably unaware of. And so I think that goes along the lines with when we talk to our listeners about knowing their guests, right? Making that decision if you're going to invite children, making sure that you put on your RSVP card, you know, let us know if you have dietary restrictions. And so, you know, I feel like those are some of the ways to help ensure that you're able to make everybody as best as you can comfortable. I don't know. I think that, you know, most people know, obviously, like, for example, we had a listener reach out, and that's part of the reason why when I heard you on Clubhouse, I said, oh, we got to connect. One specifically that I remember is a listener who reached out, and Christy helped me with this. Her brother, is he autistic? He was autistic.
Yeah. And had social anxiety issues as well.
And so she was like, do you have any ideas of how I can include him? Because he's my brother, and we're close, and he's special to me. And I don't know if he could be in the wedding party. Like, I don't know if he's going to want to walk down the aisle and stand there. Like, what
else could
I do? She didn't
want him to feel pressured, specific, like that pressure would be debilitating, she knew, and that would make him close off and not enjoy himself. So that, I think, specific, like, you're in the wedding party, can feel like pressure. She wanted to figure out how else he can participate, and we had some ideas, but I think they were the same ideas we would have given any, like, if she had asked. He's shy.
Yeah.
So we didn't, I don't think we dug as deep as we could have on that.
Well, no, because I personally don't know anyone who's autistic. And so
now I do.
But I didn't have experience with that. So, I mean, I had ideas, but I felt like, shit, you know, like I don't feel prepared to answer this. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of the reason I wanted you on today too, is because I think that, you know, you as someone who's an expert and someone who lives, you know, with a disability or two disabilities, which, by the way, I'd love you to share your story, because you weren't diagnosed until later on in life. Mm-hmm. So that, but just kind of, you know, helping listeners by giving ideas, for example, what would your answer have been to this listener?
So I would say, you know, as much as she knows her brother best, her brother knows himself best. And you can have a collaborative kind of session, when brainstorming session, where you can say, well, what would work for you? What would you like to, you know, what would you like to do? How would you like to feel included? And there's a few things that happen sometimes. Sometimes people really surprise you for that one day. And if they know how important it is to you to do something in a certain way, they can really surprise you. And I've just seen some amazing things where people who seem extremely shy or extremely withdrawn and extremely anxious about doing anything in public. Was a great example. There was a show, it was an Australian show for autistic people dating. Anyway, at the end, the partner, he was upset. He didn't want to go anywhere. He had to have the right socks to go out, and they were going to go to dinner, and he was super nervous. Anyway, he ended up proposing, and he proposed in public outside with a pianist and sang a song to her, a song that he wrote.
Whoa.
And I'm just like, it floored me, right? Because like 2 minutes ago, he couldn't go out and he was like super nervous. And then the next thing you know, he's serenading her with a song that he wrote and singing and proposing. So it's like, sometimes you'd be surprised what people are able to do. And even for me, when I say, yes, I'm autistic, but I get up and I speak in front of hundreds of people, in the crowd.
Yeah.
No problem. That actually energizes me. Will I go and sleep for 2 days after? Yes. but at that time, I'm there and I show up and I'm able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. I think really like having an idea of what, you know, what that person's willing to do to make it happen. And there's kind of more of a, for me anyway, I can say that there's a prep, in a sense that if I know I'm going to be doing something and I need to be at a certain place, let's say I need to be at a wedding and I'm in the wedding party, I'm prepping mentally for months or weeks before. And that week leading up to it, I'm extremely cautious with my energy. So I'm making sure I get enough sleep. I don't change my diet. I make sure I'm not trying anything new. This is not the time for it. So that I'm going to be on for that day. And then I'm going to probably withdraw for the next like 5 days after that. But I will do it so that I will do what I need to do for that one day. So I think for me, if I knew that was something that my sister wanted and needed from me, I would be able to, and I would have fun too. I would have my, if I was too noisy, I'd have my earplugs. Some people wear glasses inside if the lights are too bright. There's also the different things that we can do, and we can still make it look cool and fit in. And there's, you know, if we're willing to do it and do it in a way that works for us, then hey, give us a chance. But I think it's really important not to underestimate people and not to not invite people because you think it's going to be too difficult.
I think people are, you know, they're nervous to talk about this. They're afraid to talk about it. And, you know,
yeah, she was like a sister, you know, close, and felt like we have open communication. And I think our first advice was like, have a conversation with him, like ask him what he's comfortable with and how he would, you know, have a really fun day also. So I'm glad we said that. That was a, you know, a close relationship, but I do agree with Michelle that people, and if you're planning your wedding, there's 100 guests and you've made sure that it's, you know, got a wheelchair accessible and that it's, there's going to be plenty of people around to help your grandma who, you know, has, you know, is hard to, can't see very well. And you have a vegetarian option and, you know, you'll provide like a quiet area, like a lounge area outside of dancing. You kind of think like, look, I'm doing, that's enough. I've done enough. I've checked some boxes. I've made sure who I know of will feel comfortable. But outside of that, I think there's a little bit of an element of like, I can't please everybody, or I can't make this about everybody's accessibility, especially if I don't know, you know, like if it's the spouse of a friend, you know, sometimes we don't know. And I'm wondering what would be the best way to kind of open the door for like Michelle mentioned, you know, let us know if you have any dietary concerns and we'll try and have something available. But right. beyond that, what's some good wording or a good way to open the door for guests that you're inviting to give you a little bit of information about themselves that would be helpful in the planning process?
I really think it's okay to ask. It's perfectly mm-hmm. okay to ask about these things and to say, you know, do you have allergies, dietary restrictions? You know, would you be needing a quiet room or not? That will let us know the capacity, let's say. Those kind of things. And I think it's the more that you put on there in terms of options that you think you'd be willing to offer, the more you're going to see that people will start to disclose, because people need to feel safe in order to do it. But I do want to caution a bit, like, you know, you're saying, well, she had that conversation with her brother and she was kind of, and she's close. And so she'd be able to have that conversation. But at the same time, you can tell that it was a bit protective, right? She was mm-hmm. obviously protected. Like, she's like, oh, well, I don't want, you know, and it wasn't necessarily giving him a chance to really show his independence or you know, because right. she has such a close relationship. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes we get kind of overprotective and we're like, well, I know that this person's going to be picky, so we're just going to dance around it. But
yeah,
like if you make gloves. It so that, yeah, you know, and so like if we make it so that everybody kind of feels that they have an option to be able to speak up and be heard. And again, you know, I know weddings are super difficult. You can feel like, okay, I can't please everyone and this is my day. And I get that too. But you can do things that are going to help a vast majority of people. And you might also be surprised at how people you didn't expect will take advantage of certain, I'm going to say perks or accommodations that you might
accommodations.
Offer.
Yeah.
As
we're talking, it's occurring to me that, you know, everybody has a wedding website. You can only put so much information on an invitation or an RSVP card, right? But we always recommend that they put their wedding website on, mm-hmm. on that, on those print materials. And I think it would be so nice to have some wording on there, like you're saying, like, we want everybody to be safe and comfortable at our wedding. You know, maybe say something along the lines of, besides, you know, any special dietary requests, if you have special needs or a disability, please let us know. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, it would be lovely and kind of like another step, or, you know, that not many people take, because, you know, it's just, and again, knowing your guests, but I mean, I think that would be a lovely thing to put.
Yeah, that's exactly how I foresee things.
Yeah.
And like, I think I said in our conversation before, you know, just having, let's say you have a bowl of earplugs that's available for everybody. That's not expensive. And it's there so that if people feel they don't necessarily have to come and disclose to you, oh, I don't like noise, but they can go in and help themselves. And it just kind of has this, I don't know. I know I would feel like I was super, like considered, even if let's say I always carry my own earplugs, right? but I know I would just be super touched if I went to a wedding and I saw this, like, oh, here, you might need this, go ahead, here's some Kleenex, like, whatever. And just kind of normalize it, right? Normalize the kind of things that we can offer guests at an event.
Kelly, you have an interesting, when we were talking story, you and your husband, how you met was super cute. And then you have an interesting wedding story as well. And I'd love you to talk about that.
Do you want to talk about how we met or the
wedding? I do the quick how you met, because I think it's really cute and fun. And then tell us about your weddings.
Yeah, weddings. So we met on a Friday the 13th. it was a dark and stormy night. It was really cold and it was crappy. It was October. I didn't want to go. I was finishing up a volunteer shift, and my friend is like, oh, just come across the street. We're going to this cafe. There's a bunch of people there. And I was like, okay, fine. So she kind of dragged me out, and I got there, and there was, you know, a group of people playing cards and stuff. And my husband was sitting, well, like, now he is, but husband-to-be at the time, sitting in a corner by himself. And we just kind of locked eyes. We saw each other. And he had these beautiful blue eyes, which I've come to learn were actually contact lenses. They were colored contact lenses. And when I always laugh so hard because his natural eye color is green, which I think is actually more beautiful. But anyways, so I locked eyes with this blue-eyed man. And he just walked up to me and he said, "Hi, my name is Sean. Would you like to sit with me?" And I was like, "Okay." So we started talking, and then the kind of group kind of got bigger all around us, and we were just talking. And before I was getting up to leave, he was like, "I'm going to give you, you know, this is like early 2000. So yeah, he's like, "I'm going to give you my email, my home phone number, and my cell phone number," which was like a big deal then.
Yeah.
But he's like, "I'm not going to give you my address in case you're crazy." That's what he said. I was like, what?
He's very direct.
Oh yeah. Anyway, so that's why I guess it meshes well. So we ended up dating after that. And so our wedding, what we decided for our wedding at the time was I was still in university, and he had actually returned to university by the time that we got married. So we had a very low budget. And at the time we were both also, we considered ourselves pagan, which is an earth cycle based religion, kind of following the cycles of nature and things like that. And we were using the model of what's called a Celtic hand fasting, where you basically are together, you would agree to be together for a year and a day. And then after the year and the day is over, either you walk away from each other, or you promise or ask to get married again, kind of, or ask to stay together for another year and a day, and you repeat that over and over again.
Why a year and a day? That's very specific.
I don't know. It sounds so romantic somehow. I don't.
Yeah, I'm sure it's like in a poem or a song.
Yeah, you know,
a year
and a day.
That should be the name of your business now. Just change it to a year and a day.
Sorry, go ahead. I have to calculate that anyway. So you're actually, the hand fasting is you're actually tied together with a ribbon. Your hands are tied together with a ribbon, and then you don't untie it until you want to divorce. So we have our ribbon, and it's pinned up and it's framed, and it's somewhere. I should hang it up somewhere.
I don't see it.
It's been over 20 years. So it's somewhere. I still have it. It's still together. So we did that with just a small group of 30 people in a local park, and that was our first ceremony. So it wasn't a legal ceremony.
Do you exchange rings at a pagan hand fasting ceremony? Okay.
Yeah, and we did our own ceremony. We wrote our own vows. It's 100% ours.
Somebody officiates it as well.
Yeah, so we wanted a couple to officiate for us. So I thought that was like better than just having one person. And we also walked in together as a couple.
I love that.
I didn't like the idea of like being given away or something like that. We came in as equals and got married as equals.
Yeah.
How many people were there?
30.
Okay. I mean, that, like, I guess times have changed in the past year, but when you know, that's not that small. In terms of like, there were some logistics you had to figure out, not just like me, you, a park, and efficient. Yeah. Like you had some idea of the actual way to make this ceremony your own in front of people.
Yeah.
So if you do get divorced, you know how in the movies, they throw the ring. You take your ring. You just take the ribbon and be like, I'm untying this.
You untie it, and then you're supposed to walk away in opposite directions.
Wow.
It's still
tied. It's in a frame. We still have it. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So that was your, from what I found out, your first wedding.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. And then?
So then we made it legal. So we had to make an appointment with the courthouse, and that happened. So we got married on our anniversary, is the day that we became official boyfriend, girlfriend. So that was a year and a day, whatever. So that was the first one. That was in April. And then we did the legal ceremony in August. at the end of August. That's the date that we got from the courthouse. So that that wasn't really a choice or up for debate. It was just, yeah.
That just happened to be the date that you made it legal.
Yeah.
Okay. And that was simple. Did you wear anything fancy? Did you carry flowers?
We actually wore the same outfits that we wore for our hand fasting. So nice. I had bought a dress and he had a suit as well. So we just wore the same things.
Ah, that's sweet. Hi, if you're listening to this podcast, you might be planning a wedding or thinking about planning one or replanning one, or maybe you want to be a wedding planner.
We have been producing this podcast for over 4 years. And now we've taken all of that feedback, all of the interactions we've had through the podcast, and the expertise we have as professional wedding planners, and we've created the Big Wedding Planning Masterclass.
This is a digital course that shows you how to plan step by step from beginning to end our way. It's also helpful at any stage of the planning process, even if you've already gotten started or you're at the very tail end of wedding planning.
We know not everyone can afford a wedding planner, and we saw a need for a comprehensive, customizable, completely inclusive wedding planning instructional course.
With our course, you get templates, spreadsheets, worksheets, timelines, checklists, and pro tips. Plus, we included tons of videos and screen shares to show you exactly how to use all of our planning tools.
And we're here for you. If you have any questions, please email us at hello@thebigweddingplanningpodcast.com. And if you're interested in the course, go to thebigweddingplanningmasterclass.com for more information and to sign up.
Again, www.thebigweddingplanningmasterclass.com. Thank you. And then?
And then we renewed our vows in Vegas, but I think that was our 10 year. I'm not even 100% sure that it was our 10 year. It might've been 7 years.
Wait, how many years have you been married?
Almost 20.
Oh, wow. Okay. So anniversary, you decided to go to Vegas?
Yeah.
Was it with the intention to renew the vows, or just decided when you were there?
We just wanted to go to Vegas. Like,
yeah.
While you were there.
Yeah, and so then while we were there, we ended up, it was like the last day, we ended up going to like an Elvis chapel and renewing our vows.
An Elvis Vegas wedding.
You got to do that.
Yeah. See, now I haven't done that. That would be a really good idea for a vow renewal. I'm going to tell Jose Luis, let's go to Vegas, baby, for the 20 year. Let's go to the Elvis. That's so not his style.
We have really nice pictures from it. I don't know. It was really, it's kind of kitschy, but it's kind of, to me, that was kind of fun. Like, that was kind of what was fun about it. So
that is super fun. And that's really romantic. That's really sweet that on the last day you're like, let's go renew our vows. I think that's really cool. Was there drinking involved, or were you just like,
I don't drink. And okay. Unfortunately, I had a miscarriage. So I didn't know when we went to Vegas that I was pregnant. I took a pregnancy test there. We were totally shocked. I think it was like the second day. And then by the last day, I was having a miscarriage, which I kind of thought was going to happen anyway. I'm wearing all white though. I wore a white shirt three-quarter length pants. So I'm still wearing white. And sometimes I looked at the pictures actually recently, and I was like, yeah, I was having a miscarriage during that whole ceremony and the whole picture thing. And yeah.
Wow. I'm sorry to hear that. That's very, well, that sucks, but it's also kind of a very specific memory, and that you went and just, let's get our vows renewed. Let's do this. We're in Vegas.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
I think that's probably the most interesting wedding story Christy and I have ever heard. I can say.
One, two, three, three-step wedding process.
One, two, three. All very different. It's really cool. You're not boring in the least. Well, that's awesome. And you were diagnosed later on in life mm-hmm. as being autistic.
Yeah.
How did you become diagnosed, or did you go to the doctor because you weren't, I mean, like what, how mm-hmm. did that happen?
So it was actually after my son got diagnosed. So, I started to kind of put hints together, and I went to have it confirmed pretty much because I knew I had struggled with different things throughout my childhood. And I didn't know why. Like, I didn't know why. Like, other people had more energy for different things. Other people were having fun at parties and staying up late. I couldn't do that. I could not. It would, like, you know, I would fall apart after. And so I just kept trying, like, harder and harder and harder to kind of fit in or to be like that, and not knowing why. I'm like, I'm just broken. There's something wrong with me. I don't know why. So getting diagnosed really helped me to understand, and it helped me to put boundaries, and to accept that, you know what, I'm not going to do everything the way that other people do, and yeah. it's not really useful to try and force myself to do these things. And it gave me a way to kind of accept myself, and also to, to say no to certain things and say, I'm going to do it my way and it's okay. And I can still do a lot of the same things that I was doing before, but I have to do it my way, and then it will work out.
Yeah, that is it. How old was your son when he was diagnosed?
He was just over two.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in what you saw in him and in what the doctor said, you recognize, hey, that might be.
Yeah. Me. Like I realized, like, there was a lot of things, the way that he behaved and I just seemed to get him. Like, I just kind of got him on a way that's, like, more than just maternal instinct.
Yeah.
It wasn't verbal, and I kind of knew what was, like, what I think was happening, you know? And I just saw a lot of the weird quirks that I had as a child as well. So yeah.
Wow.
My friend here, I kind of feel weird calling him a friend, but more, I guess I feel like a motherly kind of role for him. He is 19. So he's the son of a good friend of mine, was recently diagnosed in college with autism, or on the spectrum. I mean, he knew, like, something was that you call a lot of things, like, well, they're just quirks, or he's just not social. What, you know, he had, like, labeled a bunch of things, but the actual diagnosis felt very much like a relief, mm-hmm. Eye-opening, like, oh. And then I recognized in what you were saying, that idea of, like, permission then to stand up for yourself, but also with yourself. Like, that's okay. I'm okay. This is how I'm wired, or, mm-hmm. you know, I don't have to talk myself out of anything anymore or into anything, which I can imagine felt really freeing for him at 19 to know, like, okay, now I can start figuring out what tools I want, or how I can communicate more effectively when I need to, when I want to. But how did it feel for you, like, moving forward in the world? Like, were you like, okay, well, now I'm going to be even more of an app. Now it's like my life's work. Or did that come later? Or was that already there?
Well, I'd say my mom, you know, when I was a kid, I always hung out with the kids that nobody else wanted to hang out with. My mom always said, oh, you always go for the underdog. And so I always kind of had this advocacy kind of spirit in me, and kind of standing up for people that nobody wanted to give a second chance to. And so, you know, getting the diagnosis for me was not just a rebirth, but it was also kind of, yeah, acknowledging, oh yeah, you know why I fit in with those people? Because I am one of those people, right? And so, yeah, it answered a lot of questions for me, but I feel like that's when I really started to live, because I had a real identity, right? Because, like you said, before that you get a bunch of other labels. People will label you all sorts of stuff when you act weird. You know, she's the weird one, or she's bossy, she's the know-it-all, she's snobby because she doesn't want to talk to anybody. So I was labeled all sorts of things, and most of them not good. So when you get the diagnosis and you can, I'm just autistic. Okay. It's just a different operating system. I'm not bad. I'm not a bad person. I'm not, you know, yeah. Okay. Maybe I'm a bit weird, but I'll still take that. I'll keep that one.
We're all weird.
but I wasn't a bad person because of the autism, and that helped a lot to get rid of that kind of guilt or shame.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What does it mean? I mean, what is autism?
That's a big question.
I know, right? But I don't.
Yeah.
What is it? I mean, I guess for just, the simplest terms. Explanation. Yeah.
So, I mean, if we go by the medical definition, it's about having deficits, what they'll call deficits in social interaction or communication. I think we just have differences in our communication, but I think what's really, really important is that it's not just shyness or it's not just introvertedness. It's about the severity and the consistency of our symptoms, right? So it's not just, you know, sometimes that person's a bit shy. It's about the fact that I experience these issues all the time, every day. And that's what makes, you know, me and other people part of being on the autism spectrum. You know, and a lot of times, a lot of our anxiety that can go along with it is simply because society doesn't accept us the way that we are. And for me, I know that I can speak for myself in the sense that my sensory issues are caused by kind of not being able to filter out extra information that's coming at me all the time. So I hear like clocks ticking. I hear the electrical sound of like when I plug in my phone, some of those chargers, I can hear the hum.
Wow.
I can't tune out certain things. I can't tune out bright lights on my own. And so all that information is constantly coming at me. And so that can actually be really painful. And so I think when you see a lot of, especially young kids, when you see young kids who are, they, you know, when people say, oh, they're withdrawn, they're not, they're in their own world. It's not really so much that. It's more like we're protecting our sensory issues because we cannot stop feeling and seeing and sensing and smelling everything all at once. And as we get older, we can build kind of more of a regulation system where we can kind of start to try to filter those things, or we find tools like I said, sunglasses, earplugs, different kind of things to try and control that. But kids don't really have an option to get themselves out of situations that are overwhelming.
Yeah.
Or to choose to wear clothing that doesn't make them feel uncomfortable. But as an adult, it's so much easier because I can live my life in a way that I can set myself up for success and to be comfortable in my own skin.
So the coping mechanisms in a way get more refined, certainly once you get a diagnosis, but also as you get older.
Yeah.
I think about that, how you described it as like, maybe I felt like it might feel like being open to everything all the time. That would be exhausting. And when we see kids withdrawing, we can blame it on something else, but how you described it makes more sense to me. Like it's impossible to intake everything all the time.
Right.
So they're trying to figure out what to block out and how just to get through.
Mm-hmm.
How would you feel if you were invited to, how do you feel when I should say you're invited to a wedding now, maybe one that let's say, you know, you don't know the couple all that well.
I haven't been invited to that many weddings, but I think the last one I went to was my cousin's about 4 or 5 years ago. I had a great time, but I didn't think that, so I had my, you know, I had my two kids and like both my kids are neurodivergent.
Both. I was going to ask you, were your sons invited?
Yeah. So we went as a family, and we went to the ceremony part first. And then there was the reception at a different location, but it was too much to, I knew that they could not sit down at the table and eat dinner. I knew that that's just not going to happen. Okay. And so my husband ended up going home with the kids, and I only found out the day of, like that evening, that they had reserved hotel rooms, because it was at a hotel, they had reserved rooms for family members to go. So my other cousin, who has like three kids, she had her kids, and her husband and her were kind of trading off, like time in the room with the kids and time out. But nobody had told me that.
So you could have had the kids stay and gone into that room when they needed to have calm.
Had I known that, I would have brought everybody. We would have just gotten a room and stayed there. But nobody told me. So, and I didn't ask, because I'm just like, I didn't want to feel like I'm putting them out either. So
did your cousin's children have special needs as well, or they were just young and they had a room for them?
Yeah. They're just small as all.
Yeah. I mean, so let's talk about that, because you did, when we were talking on our onboarding call, Kelly, have some ideas for couples planning a wedding who have autistic family members or family members. What did you call it? With sensory...
Sensory issues.
Sensory issues. Or, I mean, this is even for Kit, you know, like you said, your family member, they rented a hotel room for people with kids that could just kind of go there when they needed to, which is a great idea.
Yeah.
A really great idea. But what are some other things that people can do?
So the room is a fantastic idea, but you've got to let your guests know that it's available.
Yeah.
and not just the day of. So had that been in the invitation, or that it would have been an option for me to rent a room myself for my family, like I would have jumped on that, you know? So it's partly about the information that you're giving beforehand, to kind of, you know, we talked about letting people know that you're open to these ideas in the first place, but then also providing that information. If you have come up with ways to accommodate, then provide that to everybody, because you never know who's going to be able to take advantage. I know I had a friend and she has family members who are deaf, but she waited till like very like close to the date of the wedding before she found an interpreter. And in the end, she couldn't find somebody in time. And she was asking me, because I have connections with the deaf community. And I was like, you need to, like, you should have reserved one, like, at least 2 months before. Like, they're really busy. Like, interpreters are really, really busy. And so, especially for a wedding, it's a long time to be interpreting. Mm-hmm. So you need probably more than one. So things like that to consider, that you kind of, if you're going to have accommodations, like to make sure you're giving yourself enough time to put these things in action.
Can I stop there for a minute? This person had family members who were deaf, and so they were going to have someone there as an interpreter signing.
Yeah.
Right. I'm envisioning during the ceremony, but actually you're thinking like that they are there throughout the entire event so that they can communicate with anybody at the wedding.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah.
So she asked her cousin to do it, which I think is kind of a shame, because then your cousin's kind of working while at the party. And she gave her a gift to thank you. But you've got to, it's a whole mindset shift, right?
Yes.
If you're going to do this, you kind of have to think ahead and say, okay, well, what do I need? You know, am I going to need a gluten-free cake and a regular cake? Like, how much am I going to need? And know ahead of time so that you can find the right people to help support you in what you're trying to offer.
And then very important to communicate it to everyone, not knowing who's going to bite or be like, oh, me too. And then maybe you learn something.
And in advance of the wedding, again, having this information on your wedding website, you know, so that it's more than just the day of, so that your guests can plan and know that they're going to have some comforts there for them.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I interrupted you, but that interpreter really did... I was like, oh, okay, that's great. What else?
Yeah, so like I said, having a bowl of the earplugs available ahead of time. You can also get cheap sunglasses and have them available ahead of time. And what's kind of cute about that too is that, like I said, if you're going to have probably other guests who don't necessarily need them, who are going to take advantage, and then you're going to have everybody, it's going to be normalized. Now you're not going to be able to point out, well, that person has a problem, like, you know, if everybody's kind of doing it. I think warning people, giving people information ahead of time, like if you say, I'm gonna have I'm going to release doves, and there might be somebody who's allergic to down or, you know, bird feathers of some sort.
Or you're going to have strobe lights with dancing.
Strobe lights, especially, yeah. Those are very, very, like, that's going to be really dangerous. Or I'm going to, you know, we're going to pop firecrackers, or we're going to do this, or whatever it is. Just to make sure that people kind of know what to expect. And it doesn't mean there's no room for surprises, because no matter what you are going to do, nobody's going to know exactly how you're going to do it, if that makes sense. Like, even if you say, well, I'm going to have fireworks, they're still going to be surprised by the fireworks, like, even though they know that there's going to be fireworks, if that makes sense. So, like,
yeah.
The other thing too, like, even just latex balloons, people can have serious allergies to latex. And I was at a group camp. It wasn't a wedding, but it was an event. And somebody was allergic to popcorn, which I'd never heard of before.
That would suck.
It was interesting. So, I mean, it was a camping thing. We couldn't have popcorn, but it was okay. They just made a notice and made sure that everybody knew, and that was fine. But yeah, like, interesting things that you might not have considered, but it's only really from talking to your guests and finding out what other people do. I think other wedding planners should then make suggestions based on things that they've heard that have happened at other weddings, and be able to provide that, you know, ideas to any other people that they're working with. So it kind of, your list of things to consider are going to get larger as time goes on. Mm-hmm. But you're going to have more tools and ideas as you work with diverse people. I think that's just going to happen.
I think the easiest of these, really, and I've seen them at other weddings, earplugs are super easy and could be something that people who just are like, this music is too loud. Like, I love loud music, but my kids are always yelling at me and my husband, like, it's too loud. I'm like, what's wrong with you? You're supposed to, but like, earplugs are easy to have a bowl of by the dance floor, or, you know, and sunglasses. I've done lots of weddings, mostly are, you know, it's like a beach ceremony or it's outside, but they order a ton of those sunglasses with like their name and their date on the side. And it's like a gift. It's a favor, you know, like,
right.
And that's super cute. And people use them on the dance floor, you know, like, that's fun. And obviously the food, you know, asking if there's any food allergies or aversions is something we always should be doing. So those are very easy to implement, and something that, like you said, like, if you give sunglasses to everybody, you know, nobody knows who the person or persons who actually need them, because, you know, they're not singled out in any way. So yeah, this is all easy stuff to do.
All right, exactly. And that's, I think that's with the point that I try to make, especially when I go into businesses, but it's with anybody, is that these are easy to do. They don't cost a lot to do these things. And so just put the emphasis where it's important, you know, put the money where it's important. Like, the same way where I said having a workplace perk where you're having beer and pizza and not everybody's going to want that. Go and put that money towards what the people actually really value and what they're going to take away from it and actually enjoy.
Yeah. And that sensory room to take a break, just a hotel room, or if you're at a venue, some venues, I've been at plenty of them, there's just extra little rooms, like nooks and crannies that close off, you know,
yeah,
that
like
you
a could conference say, room.
Yeah. Like, that's going to be our relaxing room. Anybody that needs to take a break or has children or someone special needs, like, they need to get out of the environment for a little while, can go in there and bring a cup of tea or whatever it is and just chill and have some quiet time. Very easy. Anything else?
I think a lot of the times when we think about accessibility too, we don't really, you know, again, people will think about wheelchairs, but they don't always think about the other little details. So I know for one example, there was one event that was held where it was in a hotel, and they asked to have the bathrooms gender neutral. So they actually made their own signs, and they put them over the existing hotel signs because the hotel wasn't going to go and start changing their signs. So that it was just a little detail that made everybody feel welcome. They just made all the bathrooms gender neutral just by putting up their own signs.
Probably so cost little things like that. $3.
Yeah, you know, and things like that that can be really, really inclusive. And it's not just about, it's not just about wheelchairs. Sometimes it's about including people in different ways.
Well, this is awesome. This is really great info. And I think the biggest takeaway here is that, you know, to talk about things, like it doesn't have to be hush hush. It just communicate is a key takeaway here. And it should be communicated and not hush hush, because there are so many people in our lives and around us that have disabilities or special needs. And there's nothing wrong with that. That is who they are. Yeah. So this is great. I really appreciate, I'm so happy that I met you, Kelly, and I appreciate you coming on and talking to us and our audience. And I would love for you to let people know how to find you, because every time I type in completelyinclusive.com, is that the right website? Because I'm getting like a WordPress, you know, like it's not working for me.
It's just spelled different. Complement inclusive,
Complement inclusive.
And it's .org.
Yeah. So there's a .org, there's a .ca, there's a .com. They should all redirect to one place.
But it's in English.
There you go. And you can switch from English to French.
Okay, I'm going to put it in the links for the show notes.
For
sure. The URL here. There we go. Okay.
And there's also, if you go to from Clubhouse, I have kbronjohn.club, where I kind of put everything that I'm doing there. I have some freebies as well. And so people can go there.
Awesome. Clubhouse connection. Look at you.
Just made it easier for people.
You're good. You are good. This is awesome.
Buy your dot club if you don't have it now.
I did buy one. One day I heard somebody saying it like on my first week in Clubhouse. I'm like, I'm going to buy a dot club.
There you go.
And you have a podcast. Shout out your podcast.
Oh yeah, so that's called Intersections on the Spectrum. We interview autistic people with some sort of other intersectionality, like BIPOC or LGBTQ, and we just want to amplify those stories. You know, a lot of times when we think about autism, we think of the white male, and there's just, you know, autism affects everybody all over the world. It doesn't, you know, it's not just a North American thing or anything like that. So we just wanted to amplify the voices of real people with lived experience of autism all over the world and share their stories.
Well, awesome. To that end, I bet like if we have anybody listening who is autistic or has a disability or special needs, you know, we'd love to hear from you. And I bet Kelly would probably love to hear from you. If you happen to be planning a wedding, let us know. And it'd probably be interesting for you too, to have someone like that on your podcast.
I'd be happy to. Absolutely.
Cool. Look at that. Making connections, you know, making it happen. Excellent, Kelly. Well, tell your kids they can go beat each other up now. And
they're just doing it quietly. That's all.
They're doing it quietly. Good.
Sometimes
good
that's job. Worse.
thank you again. We appreciate you coming on and talking to us. It was awesome and eye-opening. And yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye.
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 The Big Wedding Planning Podcast is hosted and produced by me, Christy Matthews, and Michelle Martinez. It is edited by Veronica Gruba. Music by Steph Altman of Mophonics. If you like the Big Wedding Planning Podcast, please subscribe. We are available for free on pretty much all podcast player apps. Help us get the word out by rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts.
Follow us on Instagram at the Big Wedding Planning Podcast and be sure to use the hashtag #PlanThatWedding when posting. Become part of our Facebook group. Join us and our amazing members. Just search the Big Wedding Planning Podcast community on Facebook. If you want to get in touch with us, You can email us at thebigweddingplanningpodcast@gmail.com, or you can call and leave us a voicemail at 415-723-1625, and you might hear your voice on a future episode. That is it. Happy planning, everybody. Christy, love you, love your show.
Bye.